ever have one of those mornings where everything that can possibly go wrong in the span of 11 minutes goes wrong?
I don't know how to answer because I don't want to take away from your morning, so fire away.
Well, I don't need to go into the nitty-gritty details, but just safely assume, like, anything that could go wrong went wrong in that sort of time span, and then I'm in the car just kind of seething, like, just you know, everything is under my skin, like, I'm literally a volcano ready to erupt, and then a song comes on, and all is well in the world again.
Call Me Maybe.
No, that close. No Sleep Till Brooklyn by the Beastie Boys.
Love it.
Oh, I was just like, I was just recharged. I was, again, ready to punch a stranger and saved by No Sleep Till Brooklyn. So,
well, all right. Welcome to episode 223 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. My name is Alan in Tübingen, Germany. With me, as always, is
Adam, Vancouver, primed and ready.
What is? Hey, did you get hit with oil? Big oil spill in Vancouver yesterday.
I know, I saw it. I did. I didn't realize where you were going until you mentioned it. But
no, you work in the fry cooker.
Yeah. No, I saw all the pictures, and it's kind of scary. But I guess you won't be swimming in English Bay anytime soon.
Well, in the summer, maybe, but I guess not.
I don't know. That seems like maybe not. I'd rather they have oil spills in someone else's areas.
Yeah, what happened to Alaska?
I don't know. It's getting a little too close to home now.
Well, yeah, the Alaska one, that's current. The Exxon Valdez, what was that, 25 years?
Yeah.
Really, really staying current on that one.
Yeah.
What is going on, though?
Nothing. Nothing's going on.
I was wondering, too. I mean, stuff, I guess, is going on.
The world. Oh, it's almost the hockey playoffs.
Yep.
Couple more days.
The world doesn't care.
Yeah. Just except Canada. For maybe Vancouver, Winnipeg, and Calgary.
Right, and Montreal.
Montreal, but all in the playoffs.
Ottawa? Didn't Ottawa get in?
Ottawa looks like they might. They're still not 100%, I don't think, until the last game of the season.
This is a big deal for all you non-Canadians listening. We don't normally get this many Canadian teams in at once, and the last Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup was?
Montreal?
Whew, I thought it was too, but then it got halfway done, and I was like, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was, and it was in the 90s, so.
Yeah, there was 94, I'm going to say.
No, 94 was one with the Rangers against the Canucks.
93, I meant
to
say.
I think it was 93, yeah.
And they beat the Kings.
Yeah, I believe you're correct.
Yeah, because that would have been, holy cow, the LA Kings with Gretzky were going to win the Stanley Cup. But then the Habs did. Okay, there you go. History lesson done.
All right, everyone's caught up, yeah.
As we found out last week, if you listened to the show, it turns out I did not invent the Brennizer method.
Hey, you want to know something?
What's that?
Well, I didn't invent it either.
Yeah. It would be weird if I did invent it, but I still named it that.
But let me just tell you something. Mm-hmm. This goes against my normal makeup, but I listened to that interview.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, you didn't expect that, did you?
It was a coin toss.
Yeah. Wow, I can't even believe I got those odds.
Yeah.
But listen to it, and a wildly fascinating guy.
He is. Yeah.
I mean, you kind of built it up a bit, so I kind of thought, all right, like, you know, you're overselling it like you oversell everything.
I downplayed it.
Yeah, no, it was really, really good. The guy was wildly fascinating to listen to. And so anybody who hasn't checked that one out, I would highly encourage you to go back. What number was that?
222.
So just one episode back. Like, we're 223 now, right?
Correct.
Yeah, just stop listening to this one if you haven't listened to the last one. Go back. It's probably going to be better.
Well, it's not going to reference. It's not. You don't have to. It's not like Breaking Bad where you have to know what's going on. in the big arc.
That's true.
But it was good. And in the small world, despite the fact that he is from NYC, it turns out he's friends with our friend Amber Hughes.
Really?
Yeah. Because I told her that he was on our show, and she, oh, get out of here. Yeah, she knows him.
Oh, so, neat.
In the whole
small world of photographers.
Yeah, of all the really good wedding photographers tend to know each other, it turns out.
You know what's weird? This is talking about wedding photography, so this is related. I was talking to, you know, somewhere at work, like, again, I'm a physiotherapist. I think we've made that clear on the show. So I, you know, talked to patients about this and that, and so came up that one of my patients, his daughter was getting married this weekend, and you know, he was telling me, oh man, like, it's expensive, and you know, they're paying, like, he's largely paying for his daughter's wedding, mm-hmm. and it was a lot of money when he was talking about, you know, what they're paying for the photographer, and they did a little engagement photo shoot, and he was telling me, I want to say for an hour it was like, you know, $600 or $700, and then he showed me the photos, and I was taken aback by just how ordinary they were. Like,
no.
this was not the work of Amber Hughes, let's say that much. Like, this, and I have no idea, I don't even know who took them, just that their rates were wildly expensive for the product that was being returned. And I was kind of like, really? Like, how does this get to this? Like, how do people command these rates? And I mean, I don't know all the ins and outs and how the person was recruited. I think it was via a wedding fair, and I don't know what happened that you would choose this. And then, you know, we're talking, I want to say the price of the wedding, and I don't know about second shooters or whatnot, but he was talking definitely more than $5,000 for the wedding day.
Wow.
And based on the
photography,
just for the photography. So, and based on that price, you know, it made sense that, okay, an hour was like $600, except for the product being returned was very inferior product. And we're talking even like white balance issues with the $600 photos, which he showed me on his phone. I don't know. I just thought, like, this is somehow there's a problem here in the fact that there is no standardization. Like, if you're a doctor, you go to medical school, mm-hmm. and in photography, there isn't such a thing, not that I'm aware of anyways. And so, you know, even like you say, what happened with Amber way back when somebody is advertising, they could not necessarily even be using their own photos. Or like Neil Van Niekerk talked about when we had him on the show, is like, you know, they're showing the hero shots. Everybody gets lucky occasionally. And so you don't really know what you're getting, right?
Mm-hmm. Interesting that you should bring this up. Because I don't know if you know this, but last night I interviewed Amber for next week's episode.
Okay.
All about how to hire a wedding photographer.
Okay.
And we answer a lot of the questions that you just posed.
Yeah. So there you go. Just because, like, if anyone's looking into getting a wedding photographer, just because you're paying big bucks, that doesn't mean a whole lot.
Okay. Well, don't spoil the lead for next week.
Okay, but based on what I just saw, yeah, that's kind of disappointing. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there you go.
Okay, we'll skip the rest. Got rained out last week in baseball.
Oh no!
Yep. So that'll be rescheduled. So we open
doubleheader. Doubleheader.
Well, they're all doubleheaders already, so we can't do
triple
a
header.
We can't do a
triple
quad.
Header.
Oh. No, picked a later date, but yeah, okay. It was rained out. It was approximately within one, you know, plus or minus one degree, 0 degrees at game time and raining.
Great.
So it was like really glad we didn't play. But yeah, so tomorrow we open on the road, another doubleheader.
So you're still batting 1,000.
Zero batting zero. Well, divided by zero.
Oh no, this is your worst year ever.
No, if I do get a hit tomorrow in my first at bat, I'm just going to retire.
Okay.
Just going to walk off the field. All right, guys. But it's like a 2.5 hour drive home, so I might stick around. We'll see. Yeah, playing the Hornets tomorrow in Bad Homburg.
Oh, they sound tough.
No, they're the team we should beat.
Okay. Yeah, they're not sting crazy.
No. Good. You should write their copy. Yeah. So, but they don't broadcast their games on the TV. So,
do they broadcast their games on Amazon?
They should.
Yeah, they should.
Something to think about. And if they did, click through our site first and help us out. That's what I would. Good tie-in, Adam.
Yeah, as a segue.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Just beautiful. I don't think I bought anything on Amazon this week.
No, neither did I.
You know what I'm looking for, though? And this is no joke. An old-time pencil sharpener.
Why?
To sharpen my pencils.
Right, because just a regular little twisty one doesn't work?
I'm not a fan. They don't do a good job.
So what's an old-time pencil sharpener?
Like the one that you bolt to the desk?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They still have those in schools.
In school, well, yeah, but I can't really roll into a school with my screwdriver. nothing.
But wait a second. If they still have them in schools, I'm hoping they didn't purchase them all like 500 years ago.
I think they did.
I think that's not on Amazon. No,
They have them on Amazon, like replica old ones, and they're very expensive here in Germany. So I'm going to be searching on eBay.
What about just the electric one? Those ones made by Boston that you plug in and then just like
I don't want that.
1.3 seconds.
It's no. You know, I want the old crank.
Oh, okay.
I want the old time. I used to have one. I used to have one when I was a kid. Maybe I still have it in the attic in my dad's house. I don't even know.
Do you have just like 300 pencils that are just waiting there, ready to be sharpened? And this is really getting to you now.
Well, 300 is excessive, but yeah, I use pencils all the time, and I need to sharpen them. And yes, I'm a pencil guy.
What are you doing with your pencils?
What do you think I'm doing with my pencils?
Like, are you drafting or like I don't understand.
Oh no, like, no, nothing fine like that. No, this is just writing, everyday writing.
And yeah. pen doesn't work for you.
You're opening a can of worms here.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Let's move on.
I keep my pens under my cell phone.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Put it that way.
Okay.
So there's that. Did you shoot anything interesting this week?
I shot lots of photos this week.
How come? Well, I'm interested to know why you shot a lot of photos this week.
Well, we went to the island. I think I mentioned it on the last podcast that I said that we were going to be going. So we went to where my parents live, which is near Victoria in BC, which is on Vancouver Island, for those who are doing the fact checking on the geography. Mm-hmm. We visited the cousins, and it's, you know, we don't get to see them that much. So my brother's kids, we don't get to see them that often, maybe two, three times a year. So the kids get together and they just have a blast. And so I like to document at least a few photos a year of the kids together, because it's kind of nice to throw one of those photos up on the wall. It's kind of, you know, watching all the kids grow up and how they look different year to year. So of course, I took the opportunity when they're all together and when they're not, in the midst of some elaborate game, to take a few photos of them. So I did that. And then of course it's Easter. So I didn't really take a lot of Easter specific photos, but I did take a few of like my daughter and my son, just with the little bunny ears. Again, kind of one of those photos that I take some kind of photo of them doing something Easter specific, just like, you know, Christmas or Valentine's Day. I try to have one photo of each kid, just again, mm-hmm. so we can sort of have that photo each year. It is sometimes a little silly, but it's just the documentarian in me.
I hear you. I hear exactly what you're saying. I mean, it's difficult right now for me again with the my kids don't really want to cooperate with anything.
Is that a word, first of all, documentarian? Is that did I make that word up? Is that a word?
We call it the Brennizer method.
Okay.
Yeah. But also I'm going to guess, like, here, the weather took a turn for the good.
Okay.
Or was it nice weather there?
Yes, it was very nice weather.
This is what's happening here. Still cold at night and all that. And aside from that one rainy day that I described to you, that instead of playing baseball, we got rained out. We took the family for a rain walk, put the boots on and the umbrellas, and went and ran around in the rain and jumped in puddles and that sort of thing. Covered the camera, have a camera cover, so I did that and ran around. So that was nice. But other than that, it's been great weather.
Just speaking of cover the camera, have you seen these plastic sleeves that you buy specific to cover your DSLR? It just looks like a giant Ziploc, but it's $12 or something at the camera store?
I have not seen that.
Okay, well, I would advise not buying such a thing, but it's out there, yeah.
Okay, well, I have an old one I have from my video camera that I've basically just sort of repurposed
Okay, so I didn't mean to take you off track.
No problem. The point being is the weather has gotten so nice, and you know, we're outside in shirt sleeves again, and somehow that just lends itself to me wanting to bring my camera out more. So I took a lot more pictures this week of nothing in particular.
Right.
Except for the, again, I've talked all winter about how the light in my house, I'm loving the window light. Well, the light in our backyard is equally as pretty.
Nice.
We're lucky. We have a nice south facing backyard, which was always the goal. Like when we wanted to buy the house, number one thing was backyard faces south. Okay. And it's a lot of light coming in, but the good news is a lot of light, all those windows that we have for window light now act as bounce in the yard.
There you go.
So there
you
go.
It's like a little studio back there.
We have a lot of little areas where, like, I'm starting to recognize, okay, here, and here, that's where I'm going to make sure that I take photos. Yeah, just for that reason, at certain times of the day.
Nice.
So interesting-wise, I don't know, but... Point being is the cameras are back out now. I'm shooting with all three cameras at any given time, so I feel better.
What this is, again, just an aside. You know how we're always talking as photographers about packing light, and you know when you're traveling, like you're looking, you know, for sort of a compact kit and not needing to take anything unnecessary. Still wildly disturbing watching people travel. Like I was on the ferry the other day, and people carrying around their selfie sticks, which essentially is a golf club. So you're just there's no good place to put this thing. This the one that I saw, like, does not condense down into a small little item. It is a golf club that you are carrying around, a long piece of metal, and I still don't understand. Wait, the trend.
These don't telescope?
Not the one that this girl had, nope.
I assume they telescoped into the palm of your hand.
No, this one was literally a putter. It was a putter, and it did not telescope.
Because I saw an old man, like, you know, in his late 60s, early 70s, which you know, I don't think is insulting to call him old.
Okay, elder.
No, old man. He was an old man, but he was in like the old town here in Tübingen the other day, and he had a selfie stick. Now I don't know if it telescoped or not. That wasn't the point. I just thought he was. I could not believe a man of his distinction. I'm going to go ahead and say he had a nice white beard. You know,
sure, yeah.
Was bothering to carry a selfie stick.
Like, I know. I don't get it.
Like, what did this guy do when he was eight?
You know when I'm going to be, the ultimate disturbing thing will be when they make the minivan sticker of the person with the selfie stick. Then that's it. I'm calling it quits at that point.
I don't know. I think that will be the only thing that actually redeems it, because that will be tongue-in-cheek.
you're distinguishing yourself as the selfie, as the selfie guy.
I think at that point, you have technically jumped the shark, and you're making fun of the selfie people.
Or you are just hardcore selfie stick.
I suppose. This trend can't go on forever.
I hope not.
Yeah. On the other hand, I kind of wish I had invented it.
Yeah.
Because this guy is laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, maybe.
Bob Selfie.
Yeah, or the guy that invented it got ripped off in somebody else's.
Either way, I wish I was the guy hammering those checks. On the selfie stick.
Yeah.
what are we doing?
Yeah.
What is this? Come on now.
Would you not be embarrassed, though, if somebody asked you, well, how'd you get your fortune? Selfie stick.
No, I would lie and say that a pyramid scheme. Yeah. yeah. Basically followed in the footsteps of that, I forget his name now. The dude from New York.
Okay, no, it's not important.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I can't even think of his name. Madoff. Like, that is probably more noble than the selfie stick.
Bernie Madoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Savings and loan scandal. That was me.
That's right. More respectable.
Way better. Way better. The thing is, now here on the flip side of it, if any of our listeners actually do have a selfie stick...
Stop listening to our podcast.
Well, no. Before you do that, and wish to admit it after this rant, write in and explain to me, sell it to me. Sell me why you like your selfie stick.
Yeah, show us the photo that you would have never had and need to have had with the selfie stick.
All right. We're going to do a whole show about this in the future. Yeah. That's about it for what I shot that was interesting. Photo challenge.
Photo challenge. New photo challenge, a homemade selfie stick.
I would just love to see people having the camera turned around and just taking regular photos with it the other way.
Yeah.
For no reason. Yeah. Okay. We're
off topic.
Serenity now. Okay. Photo challenge was Easter.
Right.
You know why? Because last week was Easter.
Right.
This was challenging. I don't know about you, but for me, this was this really was a challenge.
My challenge of this one, because I was picking what I wanted to use, because I had about 10 photos that I could have chosen for Easter.
Oh, I had closer to zero.
Yeah, no, Easter was, because like I said, we went to the island, we visited the cousins, I took a few shots of each kid doing their little bunny ear thing, and then I really was sort of stuck of which one do I choose. So let's go with mine first this week.
Okay.
How about that? Just because I'm already talking. And I ended up going with, like I said earlier, I just went with a cousin group shot. Because to me, you know, this was one of those things about getting together with family. So, you know, I sort of said, I did the token shots. I will post a few of just the cutesy kid bunny shots, on the Facebook site. Mm-hmm. But I thought for the challenge, I'm just going to go with a good cousin group shot, because I think it's one of those things that when you get four children together, oldest one was 11, Jack is the youngest at 6, getting a good group shot and getting cooperation is challenging, and I think it feeds into our topic, which you'll get to after. So okay. I went with this. So you see the group shot. This is in behind my parents' house, open shade, four kids trying to get like a nice background behind the kids. There is like my parents have like their they have like these little white poles that stick out of the ground, maybe like I don't know, 8 inches out through the ground. It's part of their septic system. So I really had to get low and pose them at an angle where I could block those little white posts out.
Okay.
So I was trying to get like the background where the sun was peeking through the trees, the open shade. I wanted all the color and then get them. I wanted the trees aren't that far away, and I wanted a pretty shallow depth of field. And so getting them all lined up so that I could, you know, shoot this at whatever, an F3, 0.5, I think, or something around there is what I shot this at, and keep everybody's eyes in focus, like all of that, and then have them all smile at the same time. Like, you know, that in itself is a challenge, and how do you do that?
Like this, I suppose.
Well, get your father, in this case their grandpa, to stand behind you and basically do all sorts of silly things to the cameraman. That's what went on
here.
Wave
cash around.
Well, no, pretend he was going to kick me in the rear end, or making bunny ears behind me, and like just all sorts of goofy stuff. So even for kids this age, that works, because you always inevitably get one kid, you know, whose smile is either nowhere to be seen, making a goofy face, looking in the wrong direction, almost intentionally, I think, most of the time. But mm-hmm. I did manage to snap a few. And all of this took maybe 2.5 minutes, because they're all like, all right, we're off to something else, right?
So this is a job well done. I know exactly what you're speaking of in terms of getting, you know, two kids together. It's hard enough, and yet to get four is... So this is a great example. This is going on the wall at your folks' house, I'm guessing.
For sure. I'm going to make an enlargement for my folks. I'm going to make an enlargement for our own house, because I don't have a picture, definitely not a recent one within the last year or two, of all the kids together. And this is probably the best photo of the four of them together that I have, just based on all smiles, and the pose is very relaxed. And I was thrilled to get this. In the 2 minutes that I spent, my dad said, "Do you think you got anything?" And my brother said, "There's no way you got anything." And I walked away saying, "I for sure got something." So there's the there's the cameraman feel. Like, I just knew in between one of them, I had one at least. And turns out I probably had three or four, but this was the best.
No, this is a great photo. Obviously, obviously it doesn't scream Easter, but that's okay.
No, no, it doesn't scream Easter. But it does, like, when I look back on it, to me it says Easter. I know it's not.
It does to me too, though, but for different reasons. For me, it's the trees and the leaves and the ferns. Like, to me, that when I was a kid, we used to go camping every Easter weekend, and our Easter egg hunts would be at, like, you know, Alice Lake or somewhere like that in among this setting. So for me, so for you and for me and nobody else, this is Easter.
Yeah, and what's interesting is the light at this time of year. Like, when I look at this photo, the warmth of the light on Jack versus the cool on the far side of the frame on my daughter Sarah, even mm-hmm. almost midway through Sarah's face, it changes to from sort of a warm to a cool really quickly across the frame, which is, right. again, I think a little bit of a tell in time of year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and nice so warm sunshine in the background.
Yeah, nice warm in the background. Yeah,
yeah. So was this fill light? What did you do for the bounce light?
Nope, this is all basically just available light in the shade. That's all it
nice.
Is.
Nice. My so favorite.
There's no prep work at all. And then I put in another photo. Like, I won't really talk about too much, but just to say I did one. Typical kind of standard Easter one that I included as an alternate with my daughter and my wife, and it was taken the day before where it's more overcast, and mm-hmm. I just thought I threw it in there because A, it's what we expected that I would probably take, and the light is just so different, like, just, you know, looking at the difference on the sunshiny day in the shade with the first picture and then the one that's a overcast day, looks like it's shot with a softbox, but it's just that's the overcast light and how it affects the trees and everything in the background, I thought was just so interesting. Exact same spot, basically just one day to the next.
Yep, also a great shot.
So there you go.
All right, let's have a look at mine. Mine is the one with the three kids.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, here's the thing.
With the light, bright light.
The bright light coming in behind. Now, this is... This, like I said, this was a challenging shoot because we had friends come and stay over for Easter. We had friends from out of town come and visit us.
Yeah.
With their kids, and their kids are, well, one's about Emily's age and one's a couple years older. And so there's that. So we had the big Easter egg hunt inside the house and in the backyard. And I thought, you know, like in years past, I've watched, you know, my daughter going to do her Easter egg hunt. Well, we kind of hide them in plain sight. We did in the past anyways because she was so young. And so I could basically get out in front and I could just sit by an egg and wait till she sees it and then snap the excited look on her face.
Right, right.
That went away this year. Because first of all, she's running around like a mad demon. And the other two girls, despite me asking them, hey, please just leave these ones alone for a second just for the photo. So I can get a picture of my daughter getting it, they would just grab them. Oh, I got one, you know? And so there was that challenge. So I could never get out in front and actually get a shot of the Easter eggs. And so I snapped this one, and this one was actually the lens flare in the original photo was way, way more pronounced because this is the morning, the sunrise coming up in the background there. But even then, you can still see in the front bottom right, you can see the reflection from one of the windows in my house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Lighting
up that
one patch. So that's fairly common in the backyard at different times of the day. So, no, but I managed to bring the contrast, crank the contrast up a little bit and bring the image back, but it was wildly blown out because of the lens flare. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I felt like this really spoke to me what the Easter morning was actually like. Not the perfect photo, not the best lighting, not everything, you know, all put together. But this really was exactly what was going on,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So there was that. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah. No, I think you pretty much covered it. I don't think this isn't one that I don't think we need to critique composition or white balance or anything like that. It is what it is, right? It's one of those photos.
I did get a print made for your mom's wall, though.
Perfect. Perfect. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No. I'm gonna give you a pass because I like these kind of photos. These are photos that, you know, exactly speak to what was going on, and mm-hmm. that's fine. There's nothing doesn't all have to go on the wall. Is all I'm saying.
Well, no. And this one, I think I will like this picture in 3 years.
Absolutely.
I'll look back at this because I'm
sure. And I think Emily will too. I think Emily will like it too.
Yeah. Yeah, the other kids, not so much. I'm not going to show them because they were being kind of snotty. But
yeah,
no, they were fine. Well, I liked them just fine. But see, what I ended up doing is I thought, oh wow, I didn't really like it. So I thought I was going to cheat and basically recreate an Easter photo. And so I went and took a picture this morning at sunrise of my son with what he got for Easter, for one of his Easter presents, because that's a thing now, Easter presents.
Right.
We can't just stop it at the enough chocolate to last them until Christmas. We have to give them presents now too.
Right.
And so he got actually a used tricycle. I bought him a used tricycle at the swap meet because he wanted a tricycle. I figured he wanted a tricycle. But he also got a brand new wheelbarrow from Grandma and Grandpa, Oma and Opa.
Right.
So I thought, oh, I'm going to go and place him in this shot and retake it. And colors are nice, but it is so phony for what I was going for that I ultimately decided to shelve it and go with the real photo and still show it to show you what a phony I am.
Right. Yeah, I like the wheelbarrow photo.
It's nice, but it doesn't scream Easter to you, does it?
No.
You know?
If you took it on Easter morning, then it would, though.
Possibly. But I also decided to quickly include the one of him finding his tricycle, which you can see is more in the shade, a little more blue. Again, more authentic, but doesn't scream Easter. So there you go. So that's why I went with the one I went with. But
can I just, this got nothing to do with the photo challenge, but can I just say how much I am loving Lightroom? Like, it is so awesome. And anybody out there who is still using iPhoto or whatever.
Oh, no. Photo drop today, the new app.
What's that?
There's a new app that Apple just rolled out yesterday, I think. Called Photos, that basically it's basically a halfway point between iPhoto and Aperture, which they no longer use the other two, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
Still,
don't use those. Is what we're saying is I mean, even though I liked Aperture at the time because it was a masterful piece of software compared to iPhoto and a leap forward in what you can do. I am constantly blown away at what you can do in Lightroom and just how seamlessly Lightroom and Photoshop work together is so handy. Oh my God, it saves me time, and I'm always impressed by. Not just the time saving, but what you can actually do.
Yes, and I guarantee you there's a couple of little tricks that I picked up watching Chris Marquardt's video that you probably haven't even tried yet.
No, I know, and that's the other part of it is I feel like I am literally just scratching the surface, and that part itself is exciting because, you know, I think that once I do go through the Chris video, that, again, it's just going to open more and more doors. So, no, it's exciting. It's exciting to think, you know, how my previous Photoshop skills are applying, because again, I find that, you know, you can do everything you could do on the previous versions of Photoshop that we've used and more with the latest updates. But then, just the Lightroom itself and what you can do in there. Oh, it's fantastic. So everybody should have this. Every photographer should have this.
It is worth watching his videos just for the trick, the black and white conversion trick.
Okay.
Now, he didn't invent the trick. He just shows you how to do it. But you can basically, when you convert, now you can go ahead and use the color sliders, right, to sort of change the color filters on black and white. Rather than go ahead and just crank the red up, the white, you know, the orange, whatever, you can actually click on whatever tone that you want to bring up or down and just drag it on the picture itself. Just click on that color, drag it up or down, and you watch the transformation, and you can dial it in so quickly. And the results are fantastic. So, yes, I'm on the old one. You're on Aperture, I don't know, 99 or whatever you're on. I'm on number 4 for all those silly reasons I mentioned.
Where you're talking about Lightroom, you mean, right?
What did I say?
Aperture.
Yeah, I don't even use that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I meant Lightroom. Sorry. I'm on version 4, which is still awesome.
Yeah.
So,
and this is a subscription-based system is awesome, too. So I highly recommend it. Yeah, go
which
get
I would do, or I will do when I eventually upgrade, because I'm going to have to upgrade eventually. You can't run Windows 3.1 forever. At some point, you have to upgrade, and so when I do that, then I will go to the subscription model.
Yeah. And again, full disclosure, we are not getting anything to say that. That is just fully opinion-based. No sponsorship, no pressure, just awesome. Just make your photos better.
We don't even get anything from Marquardt.
No, this is all just what we think. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, so check it out. Okay, this week's topic. Stacking the odds.
I like this. This makes me feel like I'm in Vegas.
Yes, let it ride. Like at the penny slots, you mean?
No.
Oh.
Sports gambling.
Sports gambling. Hey, who wants to play some Keno? Going to Vegas to play Keno.
Yeah.
No, this is a situation of how do you, what are some tips? I thought of five separate tips, and you had a couple yourself, of
yeah.
How to basically stack the odds in your favor so that you get more keepers, a higher percentage of keepers out of your shots that you take. Now, ideally, right. you're not actually going to up the number of keepers that you get. You're going to minimize the number of throwaways.
Correct.
That's the goal. Don't think, oh, wow, well, I had three great shots of my dinner. I should have 80. What we're going to do is we're going to basically reduce the denominator on this one.
Okay.
Not really math-wise, though. So what are some ways that we can stack the odds in our favor to get better results faster? Number one, I wrote down a few. Number one is, first of all, time of day.
Okay.
And then in brackets, I put, you know, weather, but because it's kind of related. But time of day is the first thing you can do. Like, if you have the flexibility of when you can when to shoot, shoot in the morning, shoot in the evening. The end. It's right. That simple. Don't go and shoot in the middle of the day. We've probably said this a couple of hundred times on the show.
Now, are we talking about, you know, people photos? Does that even matter if you're shooting environmental or if you're shooting like, you know, landscapes or nature photos? Does it apply to that?
I assume if you're shooting in the desert and you want to get that overhead sun and that's what you're looking for, then I guess evening would be a bad time to do it. Other than that, I think just across the board, you're going to get better shots in the morning and in the evening. That's just okay. There's probably a few exceptions, but again,
we're thinking largely as lighting for people, though, right?
Like just even your snapshots. I'm thinking in the snapshots of people, you know, like you're going to get better results in the evening. That's just going to happen. Now, again, we're talking about stacking the odds, not perfecting the odds. That's going to be, right, you know, just in our favor. So my favorite time, obviously, is starting right about now. It's just about 7 o'clock in the evening here in Germany and in April, beginning of April. And starting now, we're just getting some really great, really great light. So much so that it's hard to miss. Like you start, as long as you get a reasonable exposure, it's hard to miss. And so you can just fire away, and you could, if you wanted, pretty much keep everything you shoot.
Right.
You're not going to, though. You're going to basically throw some away, but that's the time to stop shooting. Now, okay. The other good thing, not necessarily time of day, but think about the weather. If you mentioned it, you know, you had that cloudy day the day before Easter, that's a great time to get out and shoot. I'm guessing your results were, you got, you know, pretty much all of them keepers, lighting-wise.
Oh, yeah. Lighting-wise, overcast is great. And if you can find something in a background that isn't just, you know, gray sky, even better. So if you can,
oh, sure.
Can find, yeah, if you can find something that, you know, gives you a little bit of a little bit of color in the frame, because again, the colors tend to be a little bit more muted when you're shooting in that overcast sky. So if you can find something with color in it, then and not the gray sky, then you can make them all keepers.
What do you got for
I have, and I'm largely thinking about this in terms of portraiture. So, you know, shooting people photos, that's kind of how I always think about keepers in that way, because I think as that's the bulk of the kind of photos I do. So that's the way I think. But I thought, you know, pre-visualizing, like, is a huge element, because if you already kind of have an idea of what you want the final photo to look like in your head before you start, then you can just cut to that. Like, I find if you go out and you're using a model, whether that model is your kid or your wife or a stranger, and you don't have that clear idea of where you want them to be, what you want their pose to look like, you're going to have to sort through a lot of different photos before you see the one that you were going for. I always find now that I have something specific in mind, and so I cut to the chase, and I might shoot 10 photos, but they're all of that pose, and so now it's that pose with that background, and now I'm basically just looking for, you know, the one that has, you know, for sure sharp on the eyes, has the nice smile. I'm not sorting through 9 poses and 9 smiles and asking my wife which pose does she like the best. Like, I'm basically looking for an end result before I start.
Interesting. I love the pre-visualization aspect of it. That is, I mean, I do it all the time myself, too. I have, like you said, something specific in mind. I'll just repeat everything you just said. How about I just say, agree with you?
Okay.
Done. Number 2 on my list, and this is something that, you know, if you can't necessarily go with time of day, but maybe goes with the time of day, is location. Location can make or break your photo. Now, the 3 things that I look for, like, again, I'm talking about snapshots. I'm not talking about lighting. I'm talking about basically just, you know, things are happening really quickly and making sure I get the shot. For me, the 3 things I look for, open shade. Open shade is your best friend. That it's just going to level all the light out. On most days, you're still going to get enough light coming in to give yourself, you know, a decent aperture at a decent ISO with a reasonable shutter speed. You're still going to get all those things. You'll probably have to correct for the white balance a little bit, but other than that, you're going to get just great results over and over and over again. So much like you said, you don't have to sort of sort through all the good lighting. You can now pick the 10 shots that you took and just pick the one that you like the best. Right. You don't have to work around, I like this shot, but the eyes are kind of in shadow. Everything is going to be lit well.
Right.
The next thing I look for location, I look for like reflected light coming off other windows, buildings, or something like that. Something that's going to even out the exposure. Especially if you can find an open shade that's being cut up by some sort of shaft of reflected light, well, now you're off to the races. And these things occur everywhere. I mean, again, not the desert. I wouldn't look for it there. But in most cities, you're going to find, you know, instances where this happens.
Yeah, and this is one of those things that I never used to look for. And just through, you know, our conversations on the podcast is something that now I always look for, especially when you're out at the right time of day. So you're in the evening or just as the sun's going down and the sun's low and you're in the city, like you say, where you've got big buildings with, you know, tons of glass, you're just looking down the street, you'll see where that reflected light is showing up. And I said to my wife, actually, when we were away for the weekend, we were downtown on our own without kids, and I had my camera and I spotted a building and where the reflected light was coming in, you know, just like, you know, an hour before sunset. And I said, can we go down there and take the photo? And she said, no, I want to go home. So there you go. But I mean, I'm identifying those situations, right?
Who had the car keys?
I did. Yeah, I should have just held out. Yeah.
Power move.
Yeah. 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 But anyways, the reflected light is something that, you know, even after all the photos I've taken and all the lighting that you know I've done, I still, you know, this is a situation where I'm just getting to this now. Like, I'm just getting to the use of reflected light in these scenarios now. Mm-hmm. So I imagine there's others out there like me that haven't done a ton of experimentation with this situation. I would highly encourage it.
Agreed. And my last one, my third one needs very little, in fact, no explanation. It's window light. So when you're inside, go stand by the windows. The window light is fantastic.
Yes. Agreed. In fact, we did this is favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. We've done an episode about this entirety. So go back and listen. I don't want to waste your time repeating.
Yeah, I think people kind of get this one.
Yes. What do you? What else have you got?
I got, and again, I'm thinking about portraiture with this. I got test shots. So you don't want to waste time with your model sorting out whether or not the light is the way you want it. So I did this exactly when I was on the island with both the shots that I've included in this week, the group shot and the one of my daughter and my wife, is before they came out, I shot the test shot to make sure it was the location I wanted and the exposure I wanted, and the light was going to be the way I anticipated. And then, boom, move your model in, because I know I'm going to be operating with a limited time frame. And then it's all of those details are sorted out, because sometimes you might miss the moment with a portrait. You never know like what the kids are going to do or whether or not they're going to cooperate for very long. So you want to make sure you're not fiddling with that element in the equation as well. So I always snap a few test shots, and then boom, we're ready to go. Let's get your smiles on. Let's get you in and out.
Nothing ruins the moment like button mashing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or nothing's more frustrating than that best photo is under or overexposed, and now you're spending a whole bunch of time in post trying to save it, and it's never quite the way you would have wanted, right?
No. I did some saving yesterday, I think. Yesterday, one of the presents my daughter got for Easter was a sandbox, and so I was installing that in the backyard. And my wife snapped some photos, but she had forgotten that she had just snapped some photos inside. So walked outside on a bright, bright sunny day, right at noon, ISO 1600, f2, and 1/8000th of a second was still 3-4 stops too bright.
Right.
So I basically had to try to save those images in Lightroom. And you can only go so far. So I saved them a reasonable amount, but just some of the blown out stuff you just can't bring back.
Right.
So had she taken a few test shots.
Well, and I think you notice things too. Like you notice things in test shots. Like in my situation, like there was like little white pipes in the ground, which when I posed the kids, I don't know, you know, my focus would have been on them and whether everyone's lined up and the smiles. I don't know if I would have noticed, you know, them peeking through in the background a bit. And then afterwards, I would have been ticked off and spent a bunch of time trying to take them out of the background, or just not been happy with the photo because of their existence. So I think as soon as you take the test shots, you start to notice what is going to potentially be distracting in your background, right? So it not only helps with your exposure, but it also helps potentially, you know, solve problems that you might have to deal with later.
Good thinking.
There you go.
My next one, again, this is for snapshots, is focus is oftentimes the issue. Like when you have kids running around, focus can really be difficult.
Right.
So oftentimes I will pre-focus or at least get it close so that the camera, the autofocus doesn't have to hunt, even though it's milliseconds. Generally, if the autofocus does any hunting, the lenses I use are very fast. But if it's already close, it's that millisecond difference can make all the difference. So I'll pre-focus, but also when it comes time to taking, you know, sort of snapshots of my kids running around the backyard or whatever it is, I oftentimes will sacrifice depth of field for sharp focus.
Right, I agree.
So instead of shooting, you know, with a longer lens, like, you know, my 70-200 at an f4, I'm going to shoot with a 30mm at an f5.6. Now, I'm pretty much guaranteed to get them in focus that way. Now, sure, a lot of the background will be in focus depending how deep, you know, how close they are to the camera and how deep the background goes. But in those cases, I kind of want to make sure I get them right where I want them to be.
Yeah, and I usually do the same thing. I mean, I usually try to make sure that I shoot something with a deeper depth of field first just to make sure I've got it. And then if I have their cooperation for an extra minute, then I'll often just, you know, we've talked about the count and clicks. I'll often, and if for those who don't know what I'm talking about, go back and look up the count and clicks episode, because it's probably one of our best. What I'll do is I'll quickly, you know, race down to a wide open kind of shot where, if I get it, great. If it works out, fantastic. If it doesn't, no worries. I've got the other one.
You just nailed your third one without even knowing it. Your third example, the safety shot.
Yeah,
that is. I'm a firm believer in that. Like whether you're shooting a wedding or whatever it is, I will definitely shoot safety shots ahead of time, knowing that I'm going to be going for the hard shot later. Right. And I'm going to shoot that back up. And I'll go, okay, great. If I, you know, this one's a 7, that's fine. It'll be fully acceptable. So when if I go for the 10 and miss, I got the 7 to fall back on.
Right.
Turns out I never missed the 10s, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. It happens. It happens. You can't help it. So yeah, get the safety shot. Which is kind of counterintuitive, because now we're actually shooting more shots to get, you know, but, and the idea was to shoot less, but in the long run, you'll actually end up shooting less because you have that safety one to fall back on.
Well, and like I say, I don't shoot the safety one 20 times, right?
No.
Like you shoot a couple, and then like I say, you shoot a couple of the hero shots, and like I say, and then you basically hope for the hero shot, and you fall back on the other one. But you don't need a ton of shots because of all of the other things we talked about.
Mm-hmm. My next one I have is anticipate. Figure out, do like Wayne Gretzky, how he played hockey. You don't skate to the puck. You skate to where the puck is going to be.
That's right. It's a famous Wayne Gretzky quote.
It is.
Although I think you're close, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I was paraphrasing.
Yeah.
So I try to do that when I'm shooting. Whatever event it is, like whether it's my kids, whether it's a wedding or whatever. Well, a wedding especially, like you know what's going to happen when generally, like on, in the broad strokes.
Right.
So you know that you have to be here ahead of time to make as that shot comes into your camera.
Yeah, and you've talked about this in, you know, relation to sport as well. You shooting, you know, baseball or hockey, you know where the action's going to be. So, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of set up. Don't take a zillion photos leading up to the action. Wait for the action and take it when it happens.
Having a guy on first base, I don't shoot again. When a guy's standing on first base, I don't shoot first base.
Right.
I line up for second base and wait till it happens. And that's a great example. I was thinking about the Easter eggs. What I was trying to do with the Easter eggs was decide, okay, where's my daughter or son? What's the next one that they're going to find based on the logic in my head? Mm-hmm. And go set up, pre-focus on that Easter egg, get the exposure dialed in, so that when they find it, boom, I'm going to snap it, get that reaction on their face. Now, of course, as I described, it did not happen this year. Always next year.
Yeah, better luck next year.
So anticipate. And my last one, again, this is kind of counterintuitive because you're taking more photos, but this will ramp up your overall keeper rate. Use your burst mode.
Okay.
When you're taking snapshots, I usually tend to burst off 3 quick ones, and later on I'll quickly pick one. I will not keep them all. I'll throw the other two out, but one will be in focus, one will be the good expression, one will be, you know, the exposures are going to be the same most likely because I usually shoot manual exposure, so that's not changing. But out of those three, I'm going to keep one for sure.
I find that I do this sometimes, not all the time, and mm-hmm. where I use it, and I'm sure you do too, because we have a lot of the same lenses, is with shooting with a lens that doesn't have IS. So like mm-hmm. a long lens, like our 70-200, because it doesn't have image stabilization built in, I'll often do this. If I'm not shooting with a 1/2000th of a second shutter speed, if I'm shooting with 1/250th with that lens and no IS, it's a lot easier to get sharp images if I burst off a couple, because I might not necessarily have the camera totally still on the first one, but mm-hmm. by the third, it's usually rock solid.
And if you want us to bust out the math on you, if you shoot 10 photos and you go 0-for-10 because you didn't use burst, or you shoot 30 photos because you used burst and 8 of them work out, well, you go ahead and do that math.
Okay. My brain hurts, though. This isn't donut math.
I was going to say, yeah. How many donuts is that? So, yeah, use burst mode. That is it. Those are the 8 things that we use to shift the odds in our favor. And again, this isn't a foolproof. You're not going to go out there and shoot 100%. That's not going to happen. But you'll see the results will dramatically shift in your favor, and you'll be very happy with the results that you get.
This was a very tip-friendly episode.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay.
That's it. I'm just patting us on the back right there. I'm like, wow.
Yes. Yeah.
Helpful. Insightful.
definitely higher than 15%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Challenge for next week.
I'm sure you have one.
I do have one in mind. Blue Hour.
Okay.
I want to do that now at this time of year before it gets to be, you know, at midnight in the Northern Hemisphere is when Blue Hour will end up happening. Not quite that late, but now
and,
is that
and
a...
Just, well, I was just going to say, just for clarification's sake, yeah. this is the hour after the sun goes completely down?
Well, for really clarifying, I don't think it's actually an hour, but it is the time after the sun has dropped, yes.
Okay. So yeah. It starts immediately after the sun goes away.
I'm going to post... I shot a lot of Blue Hour stuff last summer when we were in Vancouver. Because I found myself... We were out at the beach a lot at sunset or, you know, at different places. Once down, you know, by your place at Gary Point, there's one picture I have in mind that I didn't technically shoot because I was in, but I did set it up and have someone snap it. But it was a Blue Hour shot. And so I kind of, for a long time, I was really in love with Magic Hour. And I still am. But then something clicked, and just for some reason, and you know what? We'll talk about this on one of the next episodes of Blue Hour.
Great. Just a teaser.
Yeah. All right. Wesbesites.
AdamSchwartz.ca.
I had a typo.
Oh.
Should be websites.
Okay. Still AdamSchwartz.ca mm-hmm. and Two Hosers Facebook, which I will post some of my other fun little typical Easter shots from our weekend away. And how
I look forward
stuff?
To them. No, I also liked the roller skating ones too.
Oh yeah, those were the snapshots we talked about with not the full frame, the crop camera, the Canon T2i, and the 30mm lens, which is kind of my travel uh-huh. camera.
But yeah. that place looked brand new.
Oh, it was really nice in there. Yeah. Really nice, yeah.
Not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, check my stuff out at alanatridge.com or the two of us at twohosers.com where you can find out links and photos and everything you need to know. So that's it. Until next week, get out there and make better photos.